Mike in Wichita, Kansas. Thanks for leaving up the materials for 6 months or more. I'm very new to this material. So this is just an attaboy. You're welcome, Mark. Appreciate the note. What are the top three things that you should... This is from Dan in Norfolk, Virginia. What are the top three things that you should do if you do not have a list or to direct your lunch to? The first three things is build a list, build a list, build a list. I guess fourth would be get JV partners, but that's really under build a list. So go watch the list building video. Put up a blog. Start to put up articles or blog posts and start to get some traffic coming your way, and then start to build a list. Even if it's very, very small, that's, you know, you're going to be able to launch to the very small list. So, you know, first thing to do is, you know, stop worrying about it and just go get a list. Go to Profilo or AWeb or sign up. Go to WordPress. Put up a blog and start, you know, adding stuff to the blog every day about whatever your topic is, and then start doing the JV partner research. But, you know, at this point, it sounds like you're probably not ready for JV partners at this point. So the first thing to do is go get the blog up, start building some traffic, and start using that traffic to build a list. Another great way to build a list is just go to YouTube. Put up videos at YouTube. Put up videos and give good content. Make them short. Make them punchy. 90 seconds, 3 minutes, something like that, that, you know, give a tip, and then from YouTube, you know, you direct them to go to your website to join your list, or ask them to subscribe to your channel via YouTube. But this is, I know people have done launches based on nothing else but that, putting up a series of videos, getting people excited by delivering good stuff, and then, driving people from there to your list. From Jeff in Ligonier, Indiana, with the exception of conference calls and the additional training videos, are the videos in all the modules the same as they were in version 2.0? He's talking about product launch formula. Or is there additional info in the module videos? What we're doing is, okay, so obviously these live calls are brand new. I'm adding in some videos as we go through these. So far, the first three modules have been, pretty much the same as in 2.0. The fourth module is going to be the same as well. I'm adding in new bonus material, and then I'm going to add in an entirely new module coming up that's going to be our module 6. It's going to be brand new, completely different, never seen before stuff. So basically a lot of the videos are the same as in 2.0. We're redoing that, but we're adding new material that's going to come in either via bonuses or more towards the end of the course. From Alex in Vienna, my market seems to be less responsive over time despite product launch tactics. People are busy and don't seem to have time to participate. Is this a general trend or a market-specific trend? How do you get around it? Okay, Alex, you know what happens is lists get less responsive. As lists get bigger, they get less responsive, and generally as they get older, they get less responsive. Still, I mean, list building is still the number one way you build assets for your business. So this shouldn't discourage you, but when you first come out of a launch, you're going to have a red-hot list, and they'll buy anything you put in front of them. That will decrease gradually over time. That's just reality. A lot of people don't like to talk about that, but that's the reality. The people that have been on your list the longest, they'll either love you or they won't be paying attention to you. Also, if you have a list of 1,000 people, or you have a list of 1,000, someone else has a list of 50,000, your list of 1,000 may make you might make more sales than the list of 50,000, because as lists get bigger, for some reason, they get less responsive. I haven't seen markets becoming less responsive over time. I think some markets are getting more competitive and tougher, but no, I haven't seen a general trend. So it's either specific to your list or to your market, and I'm guessing it's to your list. And how do you get around it? You continue to build your list. And also, you continue to be engaging and engage them as much as possible. The thing that makes the real difference is conversation. And if people think you're having a conversation with them, even if they never respond to you, that's what's going to keep your list warm. Okay. From Diane in Halifax, are there times of year when launches are more or less effective? I think there used to be, but I think it's less so. It really depends on the niche. Certain, you know, niches, like, I mean, if you're selling ski, you know, ski equipment, you know, you probably don't want to be selling it in, you know, in June. If you're selling, you know, golf equipment, it's probably not going to be that doing that great in December or January. But, you know, in general, but then again, you can sell against the season. You know, we're having a sale, we're having a big promotion because, you know, this isn't, you know, stuff is normally slow right now, but you need to be thinking about raising your game, you know, getting better golf scores is, you know, a year-round thing, even if you can't be golfing in the middle of January. So you could sell against the season. In general, things like with anything with self-improvement, making changes in your lives, January is really, really the, you know, a great month for that. Some markets, like the financial markets, tend to slow down quite a bit in the summer. You know, June, July, August, people don't really care about the stock market. You know, I used to fight that every year. But in general, you know, people are online all the time. Like a lot of questions, people always ask about Christmas. And, you know, I probably would avoid, you know, launching in 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th of December or January 31st. But more and more people are online all the time. So I don't worry too much about the calendar anymore. It is very niche specific. During the week of launch specifically, how do you handle customer service / support? Do you hire a staff or handle it yourself 24/7? Have you found there is a lot of demand for support or service in the beginning? That's from Mike in Washington, D.C. Great question. Basically, you're going to see a big spike up in support as soon as you go live because people are always going to have questions. So there's always going to be problems with some orders. They'll go through twice. They won't go through. Credit cards get declined. People don't get their links. There's always going to be, you know, 5% or 2%. Of your orders are going to have some issues. And so you definitely want to staff up on launch day. We'll get to this later in the course. But, in the olden days, you know, 10 years ago when I'd be doing launches that were $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000, you know, with maybe, you know, 200 to 500 customers, I could generally do everything myself, all the support myself. You know, you go live, most of the problems are going to show up in those first few hours. You know, nowadays, yeah, I do have a staff, and I do increase the staff ahead of a launch. And I make sure everyone's on board. And even we have people that might not be customer service people, but on launch day they become customer service people. So, yeah, your support issues will go up on launch day. Not so much ahead of the launch, but on launch day. And then, you know, as you get closer to the end of the launch, you're going to also have it's spiking up, you know, especially if you have a closing down, you know, and you should, you know, at the end of your launch, something happens that really, you know, puts an exclamation point on your launch, you know, so that people are, you give them a reason to act right at the end of the launch. And when you do that, you're going to have a lot of people trying to buy the last day, the last hour, the last 10 minutes, and you'll typically have some support questions at that, you know, at that point. So certainly when you go live, have, you know, all hands on deck ready for support. As you get bigger, you will need to add staff. You know, one of the things you can do is you can add, you know, temporary staff, virtual assistants, and you know, if you're going to do that, then you have a triage operation. So, like, the simplest questions can get sent off to your least skilled customer service people, your virtual assistants, or the people you've just brought on. The more complex things like, you know, I don't know if my order went through, you know, credit cards lost, stuff like that, change credit card numbers, that kind of stuff, you know, then you're going to have your more experienced support people doing that. You're going to, you know, depending on the magnitude of your launch, you might need to add staff ahead of the launch. So now I think I'm going to go to some live questions, see if we have any people want to ask some live questions. If you have a question, go ahead and press *1. And this is only going to work for the people that are actually called in over the telephone. So if you're listening to the webcast, it's not going to work for you. You're going to have to call in via the phone. I think we actually have a few lines available. So even if you're on the webcast, you could go dial in, because it looks like we have a few lines available you can get in on. But, yeah, if you're on, called in via the phone, press star 1, and then I'll be able to see you've raised your hand and go ahead and take your question. Jason?
Hey, Jeff.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Good stuff. I had the really long, kind of convoluted question that you kind of start towards the beginning about the community and the pricing of doing the standalone product. And
yep.
Just keep my head above water with that. I kind of get what, I definitely get what you're saying, and it's kind of like pick something and stick to it until you realize that's not going to work, and then change it if you need to.
Totally, yep. And Jason, by the way, I myself am often prone to that same thing. I'm like a born analyst, and I'll sit there and I'll analyze some 10,000 different ways and try to come up with the perfect answer. So, I certainly have that weakness myself. I'm not a ready, fire, aim kind of guy. I'm a ready, aim,
great.
Aim, fire.
All the pieces, rearrange them. Look at them again. Yeah, okay. Well, and I mean, that's, your answer was definitely helpful, because it's like, okay, use this to, because I get caught, because I have these big feelings of accountability and wanting to really help out my current customers, right?
Like, right.
So you provided all the extra value. I mean, I purchased 2.0 and am now just actually really being able to dig into the course because you were so generous and left it open to me. So I want to do that type of thing for my community members.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought here. Let's see. Basically, my community members are going to get added value if I can use the standalone program to also drive up our community membership, because one of the things that happens when our community membership goes up is that equals sales for my customers and not just me. So I guess my confusion was kind of based around, how do I offer this to people that don't want to be community members and use it to drive community membership at the same time? You kind of mentioned the continuity thing, which I know you do as well. Does the continuity payment generally start after they've gone through their payment process for everything else, or does it start right at the beginning, generally, right along with everything else? Does that make sense?
Yeah, generally, and this can get, the timing of this can all get tricky, especially where it gets really tricky is if you offer a payment plan on the $2,000 product.
Right.
Generally what you're doing is you're giving people a free look for, 30 days or 60 days.
So, like, once their payment thing is ended, or once 30, 60 days is ended, then the continuity kicks in.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and also, the other place that this gets sticky for me is, in order to be a member of our community, one of the requirements currently is to also be a member of one of the products that we promote, so that they can promote it along with us. We kind of have a community effort of everybody working together.
Right.
And then, so if I'm opening the standalone program to people, to attract people that maybe don't want to take advantage of that aspect.
Yeah. Can you create two levels of membership?
Maybe so.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. So it's like, don't be stuck in even the current setup of our community, and maybe have it be like, okay, you can be a member of our community, the continuity thing kicks in, but they don't have to join one of our things, but that gets them inside, maybe gets them involved, builds community and relationship to them, so that maybe down the line we can bring them into some of those other things. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. No, that clarifies things for me there. And then the other thing is, we've got, like, I need to figure out if I should consolidate these things or kind of run with it as is. We've got like 3 or 4 different websites that we've got at least preliminary setup on to be able to do the list building for the freebies. We've got, like, eliminate spam and email sprawl with our Gmail tips, and then we've got our blogging tips.info, and then we've got our web2tips.info, and then we've got, like, our content marketing, ebook and report and all that. And that's all kind of on separate sites with individual squeeze pages. Is that am I spreading myself too wide there? Should I consolidate that?
Well, I'll tell you that every super, super successful online person I know has a sort of the sprawling empire that they would like to have all brought in under one thing.
Okay.
But none of them actually does that.
Okay.
So I think what that's telling me is that, yeah, we would all like to have, like, one control panel and have everything all be beautiful and pretty.
Okay.
But the people that are having success are the people that aren't worrying about that and are just getting stuff done.
Okay.
So, I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Okay. So keep it as is, just make everything the best that it can be and don't worry about being spread out.
Yep.
Okay.
And I think the most important thing, and I gotta move along, we got other people.
Right.
But I think the most important thing is that you're obviously really concerned about taking care of your community members. And
right.
If you just keep that first and foremost as you go through all this stuff,
let it die.
I don't think you can lose that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Jason. Okay, now we're going to move along. We've got a 616 number. I don't have a name for this one.
Hi, Jeff. This is Alan again.
Hey, Alan.
The question I have, I have produced a physical book earlier this year, and so far we've sold maybe 1,000 copies since April. And the majority, well, I won't say the majority, but about half of those copies were done in the first week when we did my launch, which didn't include anywhere near as many variables and triggers and things that you're teaching here. But we sold the first 500 in the first week because I made the offer that the first 500 people would get an ebook edition of that book. And the reason I did that was because the books were still being printed and it was going to be about a month before the people actually got the books.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to do, I would like to kind of do a similar thing again and offer another set of ebook editions. But this time, rather than limit to a specific quantity, I would rather limit by a time frame, say 7 days.
Okay.
The thing I'm still stuck on is the reason why. And I'm trying to figure out what kind of reason why I can give my people for that 7-day time frame as opposed to, say, 2 weeks or a month or just make it generally available. And my personal reason for wanting to limit this is because my previous books were posted to file sharing sites, and there were like hundreds and hundreds of downloads that I consider lost sales.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the primary reason, but I also want to include a secondary reason on top of that as far as why 7 days. And I'm looking for suggestions.
Yeah, I don't think this is an easy one. I don't think you have to work that hard. I think it's just that, you know, it's basically that, you know, you love your readers, you know, you love sharing this material, but unfortunately there's a couple bad eggs. And the last time you did something like this, even though it was only limited, it was only available for a very, very short amount of time, it ended up, you know, getting passed around and illegally shared. And, you know, you'd like to let that roll off your back and not bother you, but, you know, it did because you put so much hard work into this. So this, you know, but you realize that your readers got a lot of value out of this, so you've decided to do it again. This time we're going to try a bit of an experiment. We're just going to make it available only for 7 days, and then I'm going to, you know, let it go for 7 days. It's not to say sometime down the road in the future I'm not going to do it again, but this is, let's call this an experiment. I'm going to open it up for 7 days, and I know that way just, you know, my most rabid fans are going to get a hold of it, and then I'll monitor and see if it ends up showing up on, you know, getting shared online. And, you know, if it doesn't, then hopefully I'll be able to open it down the road. But for now, I'm going to stick with just 7 days. So if you want to get it, you know, if you want the full benefit of all this, and you know, I'm not trying to, you know, put any pressure on you, force anything, but you're going to have to jump on board in the first 7 days. That's all you have to
do. You know, that was pretty much my thought on it, is just to say, hey, I'm going to do an experiment, and let's see what happens with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good that you've confirmed that for me. Thanks.
Cool. Okay, thank you, Alan. Okay, again, if you have a question, hit *1, and that will raise your hand. And now we're going to move along. We've got another one. I'm not sure of the name. It's a 604 number.
Hi, Jeff. It's Todd calling.
Hey, Todd.
I got a question here about case studies. My product that I plan to launch is based around a marketing technique that I've been having great success with.
Okay.
I've got a number of great testimonials, but I've only got two really good case studies. There are others, but I don't have all the details, so I can't use them as a case study.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem. My second best case study has just bailed on me because they fear that it's going to somehow help others be competitive against them. My best case study was my own case study, and I didn't want to use it to begin with, and here's why. The crux of the problem. When I did that campaign with the technique that I'm going to promote, after about 2 months into the campaign, I discovered that the product itself was less than reputable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I shut the campaign down. I threw away a $10,000 a month campaign, but I shut everything down, removed everything. Now, I have all the content, every detail I ever wrote for it, the follow-ups, everything. But I've always been worried about reputation and do I use it.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought maybe I could spin it somehow into a lost redemption story or I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, whenever you're coming, and this goes for anyone, whenever you're working on a story, the best place to start is the total bald-faced truth. And I think you can use both of these case studies. And both of them, you know, first of all, that, you know, yours will be, you know, it's basically going to be a story of how, you know, you're honest and honorable. That's going to be the underlying message that people are going to get, that you're willing to walk away from $10,000 a month because you only want to be involved with reputable products and reputable practices. So, you know, that's not a bad thing for people to understand about you, to know about you. And so, you know, it could be, you know, depending on how much you want to do that, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. I'm thinking, like, one way, you're probably going to want to avoid actually talking about what the product is because then you're going to have to worry about, you know, them.
Liability.
Yeah, if you're calling this thing disreputable, then you're going to have to worry about not slander but libel or possibly slander. Or defamation or whatever. I'm not a lawyer. So you're not going to want to – you're probably going to want to change the name of the product. Hopefully you can still use, you know, some of your examples and some of your copy and stuff. But basically, I'm drawing a little bit of a blank right now on exactly the way I'd position it in terms of a – but it would be along the lines of, you know – this all smacks of, I mean, people love secrets and they love dirt. You know, they think they're going to be getting dirt. I mean, this is like with Frank Kern and Mass Control. When he came out with that, his initial squeeze page and really his initial sales letter, I actually wrote the first several hundred words for him. And that was about, you know, the real secret that happens behind the scenes when these million-dollar promotions are happening and you know, things can get crazy when the $1 million are flying back and forth. And I could see this being something along the same lines where, you know, I've got this crazy secret technique that drives, you know, huge sales almost instantly. And it basically overnight built up this revenue stream of $10,000 a month. The problem is the thing can be too effective at times, especially if you're selling a product that's less than reputable. I learned the hard way. And some along that lines, and then ask them to opt in, and you know, it's got this feeling of this underground something that, you know, just when you start talking about disreputable, all of a sudden, you know, it's just going to suck in people's interest level and drive their interest meter off the charts. I would go ahead and I would tell that story. I would tell your story of how it really, really worked. You'd love to be able to share the product. Unfortunately, you can't because, you know, after you helped them sell tens of thousands of dollar product, you know, it took a while, but you realized it really wasn't a very reputable product and you don't want to be helping them sell it anymore and you actually walked away from $10,000 a month.
Okay, you see, I was hoping to actually give them, like I wrote a small ebook as the opt-in bonus for this list, and I wrote, you know, a whole bunch of articles, the whole follow-up sequence. I was going to give all of that to them, but I can't really do that, because even if I sort of blank out the name with a felt marker, like, you know, some CIA document getting blanked out or something like that to create mystery,
people will still
be able to tell from the text what the product was.
Yeah.
Now, if I remove the name everywhere and they can infer the product, do you think that's okay? I mean, is that enough to cover myself?
Well, I'm definitely not a lawyer.
Right. Yeah, sure.
My guess is it would be, but, you know, I don't know anything about defamation or libel.
I suppose I could just leave it as, rather than, you know, trashing the product, just saying that I decided it wasn't a product, I wasn't interested in marketing any longer. You let them draw their own conclusions.
Yep. Yeah, you could do that as well. Yeah. I'd still blank out the name, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then the other one, the other case study is a great one. It's like, if you just told a story, and literally, it's like, if you told the story of wheat, you know, I have another great case study, but we're just going to call this case study X because, you know, these people were all lined up, help me out. Because frankly, what I taught them has helped them completely change their lives. Unfortunately, after they thought about it, they realized that if they shared this, they might just, I mean, since it's so easy to implement and so easy to use, that they might be, you know, just creating a huge amount of competition for themselves. So they ended up backing away. But I can tell you about what they did. You know, I can't get them on the phone. I can't do an interview with them because they've changed their minds on it. But, and I'm not about to give away their product or their niche because that just wouldn't be right. But I want to walk through exactly what they did. And then, you know, tell the story. And, you know, don't give their product, don't give their names, but, you know, at least tell how, their results and maybe, you know, some of how they did it.
Right. Okay. Well, great. Thank you for the help.
Sure. You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Now we've got a cell call from, let's see, a 414 number.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, Jeff. You really helped me the last time you answered my call, so we won't go back over that. My niche is so broad-based with, there's, you know, trees, lawn, garden. Now I'm going to use a lot of asking questions to, you know, focus on what people want for the actual product. I'm going to use a couple of great opt-ins. My thing with this is kind of the story. Would it be too negative to talk about there's a, you know, like rip-offs out there, there's people, and I want you not to be dealing with people that are overcharging. These are the answers.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's not too negative. I mean, you know, a classic is, you know, the seven, don't hire a carpet cleaner until you know, you know, these seven secrets they use to overcharge you, or you know, don't hire, you know, seven things you must know before you hire a carpet cleaner. You know, something along that lines. That's always very compelling. You know, that speaks to the fear of loss. People are always afraid of getting ripped off, and that's not too negative. And frankly, you know, I mean, it's often you're really doing a service when you do that, you put out that kind of message. So it's definitely not too negative.
Okay. Now, the other issue, now I'm going to be asking a lot of questions to try to focus in on what people want, but when you have a broad-based market with, it's tough to come up with an exact avatar. Any suggestions on that?
Well, I mean, you know, what you really usually want to do is split it down and focus on one sub-niche. So, like, if you're doing trees and lawns and perennials or whatever, you probably want to start off with just one of those initially. You know, what's the juiciest, the most compelling, where's people have the most pain, what's the most timely, and start off there. And there's nothing saying you can't create three different lists or four different lists with four different squeeze pages. And still do a launch. I mean, if you had something on trees and lawns and perennials and you're putting them in three different lists, and then you come out with a product on, you know, how to hire a tree surgeon, you could still market it to all those lists. you'd market it slightly different. You know, the emails would be slightly different to all those lists, but you could still do it to all those lists. So you really want to focus down in general and pick out the best, juiciest one.
Well, that's pretty much on the target because my tree is my specialty, and you might have heard of emerald ash borer. It's a big issue in lower Michigan and now in Wisconsin, and that's going to be, you know, there's a lot of misleading things in the press. I want to make sure that people really can make a very good decision, and that's my opt-in. That's something that, you know, including a video on how to self-treat their trees. That
Well, people certainly have a lot of pain if they're losing trees. I know out in Colorado we've got the pine beetle. It's just decimating, you know, some of our pine forests, and it's just, there's some serious pain there. So, absolutely, that'd be a great way to go.
Okay, and as far as my personal story, 29 years, I'm doing this to help you with secrets that you aren't getting out of the press. That's pretty right on.
Yeah. I mean, I put some in, you know, certainly part of that is, you know, you'd love to be able to go out and look at their trees, but, you know, the reality is you can't. There's only one of you, and you don't, you know, there's only so much time in the day, so what you've decided to do, instead of, you know, working 20 hours a day going out and treating people's trees, you decided to actually just, you know, sit down and put together this report on how to do it.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay, looks like we have, if I can mute this here, Brandon.
Hey there, Brandon, yeah.
Hey, Brandon.
Hey, I just had a quick question. I know that I heard one of the VAs out in the audience saying, giving out their number or whatever, but I was just wondering if you had any future plans or anything to allow the rest of kind of the course members to connect. I mean, I think all of us being in our own businesses, I think there's probably a lot of overlap and chance for partnerships there.
I don't have any immediate plans. We are going to be putting masterminds together, so you're not going to be able to get together with everyone, but you'll get a subset of people to interact with. But right now, I don't. You know, I've certainly thought about doing a forum in the past. Still could possibly do one, but there are actually it's complicated, and the technical stuff isn't complicated. But the managing of it is complicated.
Right.
So at this point, I don't have, outside of the mastermind groups that we're going to be getting rolling soon, we don't have any concrete plans anytime in the near future.
Okay. All right, that's it for me. Thanks.
If you have a question, press *1, and I'll see it. Now we're going to go to a 970 number.
Hey, Jeff.
Hello.
It's Carrie over in Pagosa.
Hey, Carrie. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Carrie's my neighbor.
I'm your neighbor. Looking at the snow out the window.
Yes. Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah. Hey, I am learning so much, and I appreciate it. And I'm back. I'm kind of in the early stages here. I'm kind of back in the story, so I have a question about that.
Gotcha.
And I feel like you've done a lot on the reluctant hero and probably less on the loss and redemption.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I haven't been through all the course modules yet, so maybe I haven't quite gotten to that one yet.
Okay.
But here's my kind of generic question. Is I have a list of about 800 people, and they're a pretty warm list. They're not in, you know, they're not in my autoresponder yet. I've got to lure them into it. And
mm-hmm.
ever since I've been learning this stuff from this course, I'm so excited because I'm thinking of everything I do now as part of my product launch. So
right.
I have kind of an inner circle people who are excited about what I'm doing, and I keep, now I send things out to them and say, give me your opinion on this, you know, and they send something back and say, oh, well, this is, you know, and it's really neat to watch them engage. And so I'm getting ready to start sending a series of letters out to the people who are in that warm list and get them to start coming to pages and opting in, and or just even giving me their opinion, you know, to kind of get them to start being engaged in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And if I looked at myself personality-wise, this might sound kind of dumb, I don't know, but I feel like my personality, in, because I've spent a lot of years teaching innovative information to people, has been sort of like a Pied Piper kind of. I don't know if that sounds crazy or not, but
nope.
I can see using parts of the Reluctant Hero, and I'm still not really, the Loss and Redemption one, I'm not quite as clear on that, and I wonder about mixing stories together. And I know that there's got to be some story that emerges for me as kind of how I'm approaching people, but I guess if you could just enlarge on that a little more, that would be really
good. Yeah. Well, first of all, the Reluctant Hero and the Loss and Redemption often go hand in hand.
Okay.
And they're just, they're both such powerful, powerful themes that it's a shame that not tap into them in some way. And Loss and Redemption is like the Karate Kid or Rocky.
Oh.
Or, you know, there's so many. I mean, they're just like every movie, I mean, like almost every action movie or you know, I mean, they're all Loss and Redemption where, you know, you have something and then you lose it. So that makes you a sympathetic character because people can see your loss. And then
so how would you tell that story in a, you know, in a marketing a product format? I mean, there's people who tell the story of, you know, I was broke and I made $1 million. I can't tell that story yet.
Yeah,
but,
right, right.
But anyway, how would
I'll tell you, like, how I have done it recently. You know, first of all, often the loss part, you don't have to be on top of the world and then lose it before you get the redemption. I mean, you can sort of already be fairly low and then get lower. and so often, you know, that's often the way it's done. And I mean, like, when I initially launched Product Launch Formula, I put out a PDF called Back to the Wall. And I should actually put that up on the PLF site. And that was the story of, you know, how I initially got into business and how, you know, it was a rough time in my life. We needed money. I just decided I couldn't dilly-dally around anymore. My back was to the wall, and I just had to really go for it. And so that was Loss and Redemption. Then when I came out with Product Launch Formula 2, I actually told the story of when I launched Product Launch Formula 1. And in that case, I had a successful business for 10 years, and then I lost it, and it was taken away from me. And if you even go back to, basically in Product Launch Formula 2.0, as I was launching that, I told that story of how I, and that was a loss and redemption because the story was me back in 2005, had a successful business for 10 years, and it was taken away from me overnight. And this is all true stuff. It was taken away from me. So I was on top of the world, then everything was taken away from me. Then I stepped back and I created Product Launch Formula, came out with that, and all of a sudden I was back on top of the world. But the whole idea is making you into a sympathetic character by showing you've had this loss and now you're going to come back stronger than ever. And that coming back stronger than ever is the launch you're doing. And so these people are rooting for you because you're the sympathetic character that was, you know, that either, you know, that had this loss that something happened to. And it's best, of course, if it's, you know, the something, it could be an outside force or it could be just your own, you screwed stuff up. And frankly, both of them are powerful. And usually if you show a little humility, then, you know, that, well, you know, if I had done things better, then it probably wouldn't have been as bad. But, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and that's what happened. And now people are on your side. So that's the loss part. Now the redemption part is now I've turned things around. I've created this product that you can buy. And so now they're rooting for you, and it's obvious that if they're rooting for you and they're really in their corner, they really care and they want to help you out, well, there's the order button. You know, not to be too crass about this, but that's sort of the way the whole thing works. And again, you know, like a Rocky is a classic Loss and Redemption. Karate Kid, they're just all, everything like that. I'm willing to bet that if I thought about it, you know, the Lord of the Rings, I'm sure is a huge Loss and Redemption. But, you know, that's the best place to look for it is Hollywood because they are all over that Loss and Redemption.
And so would you mix Loss and Redemption with the Reluctant Hero? Well, yeah, I guess that you do.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Well, because, I've written screenplays, so I totally get
there
the
story. You go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, then you're on. I mean, you know, because if you're the reluctant hero, I mean, part of, you know, being brought out from being that reluctant hero is, you know, you know, because the loss was so great, you're forced into it. You know, you didn't want to have to reveal the secret sauce, you know, but, you know, because, you know, your dog got shot and you know, your mother got sick and, you know, I'm not making fun of anyone here or making light of anything, but, you know, the reality is that it's often, that is often what drives you. I mean, that's what drove me to create Product Launch Forum in the first place. It probably never would have happened if I hadn't lost my business in March of 2005.
Right.
And so, again, I mentioned this earlier, you know, reality is the best place to start with. But it's powerful, and when you mix the two together, they're just natural. So, I mean, and you can see this, like the new Clint Eastwood movie. I haven't seen it yet, but it's I can tell just from reading reviews, it's a classic loss and redemption, and it's total reluctant hero. I mean, Clint Eastwood obviously is every part he plays is a reluctant hero, you know. And so these, you know, since you've done screenplays, you know these themes play out over and over and over in Hollywood. They're in novels, of course, as well, and all the classic, you know, even the classic Greek, not the myths, but what are, you know, the Iliad and the Odyssey. I mean, those are, this stuff just goes way back. And it works because it touches something deep inside of us, these story themes.
Yep. So. Cool. Thank you so much. And
oh, you're welcome.
Let me tell you one thing really quick, too. In studying the units, you told about how to get a testimonial from people. And
mm-hmm.
This is just so exciting. I'm actually in a class with a guy who's a film producer. He produced Pretty Woman and The Mothman Prophecies. I'm in a teleseminar with him.
Mm.
And I did a consultation with him, and we kind of, you know, he's just been very supportive of me. And so I emailed him, and I said, how would you like to exchange testimonials? You know, I'd like to put one up from you on my website, and I'd be glad to have you put one up from me on your website if you'd like to. And how about this? And I wrote the testimonials. And he wrote back, and he said, I would love to. And he said, and he enhanced them. And then he said, he even had an audio place where he had me call his in, and then he called mine in for me. So I'm totally stoked on that.
But that's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. That's a good lesson because, you know, if you're going to get a testimonial from someone who is, you know, whatever word you want to use, a guru or a star or whatever,
yeah,
they're writing it for them is powerful because they're too busy.
Yeah.
And they don't know exactly what to say, and you know what you want them to say. So
exactly.
Write it for them. Say, are you comfortable with this? Do you want me to make any changes? Or in that totally works.
Yep.
And then one other thing about this is like if you like people look at my sales letters for like Product Launch Formula, you won't see any testimonials from Frank Kern or John Reese or Yannick Silver or any of these big name gurus. And that's not because I can't get them. Every one of those guys would give me a testimonial in an instant because they've all made millions off of my stuff. But in my market, you know, one of my big objections is people think you have to be a superstar to do a product launch. So I don't want to reinforce that by showing testimonials from superstars. I could do a teleseminar next week if I wanted to get all the top 10 guys on. They would all go on in an instant. They'd love it. And they all give me, you know, it'd be great. But I don't want to reinforce that objection. But for you, in your example, and other people in like that are outside of this weird internet marketing niche, you know, those kind of powerful testimonials from someone who's got real stature and real credentials, I mean, that's really powerful.
Yep. And that was, and you know what? It never would have happened if I hadn't learned that in your module and just went, I'm going to put this into practice right now.
That's cool.
Yep.
That's way
cool. Well, thanks a lot.
Oh, you're welcome, Carrie.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, let me see if we got any more questions. Oh, yeah, it looks like we have one more from a number I don't recognize. We'll see how this goes. Hello?
Hi, yes, can you hear me?
Barely.
Okay, I tried to talk a little bit. Is better now?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So I'm Rafael from Mexico, and I'm a law of attraction coach. I have a $25 book. I have a program with 60 videos, EFT online for $50, and now I have discovered a residual income program that people can pay $31, and for each person that comes there, they get $20 residual. So my idea is I'm launching a membership site, but the payment goes through this website that is already set up. It's something different for me. Okay, so I started to launch the program before I got your program. Then I stopped and checked the first module, and then I continued with the launch. So from 3,000 people I had in my list, 200 people show interest. Then I did a small survey. 137 people filled the survey in, and I had 74 testimonials. And a couple of days later, I made a contest for people joining the membership site could have three coaching sessions with me, and 66 people wanted to do that. But then I opened the gate, and like only 5 people joined in. And I would like to know if the numbers are kind of normal, or if there might be a problem because my program is in Spanish, people interested are in Spanish, and this residual program is in English, and they need to log in there and make a couple of payments via PayPal or credit card, and might be that this is making things difficult for them, or are these numbers normal? So, I mean, I have done videos in Spanish, explain step by step how to do it, but I would like to know what do you think of that, and if I should change and make a normal PayPal recurring membership payment easier. They are not going to get the recurring income, but at least they can understand and they might be easier for them. I don't know, what do you think?
Okay, Rafael. You're breaking up a little bit, so I couldn't get all of it. But it sounds like, you know, you ended up with, you know, from 3,000 people on your list to an interest list of 200 people, and you had 130-some people fill out the survey and 74 testimonials, but you only have 5 people join. So that seems that's a pretty low conversion rate. So, again, I couldn't get all of it from what you were saying, but I'm thinking that the offer, you know, often, you know, you can get people real excited about a launch, but unless you get the offer just right, then, or not just right, but unless you get the offer right, doesn't have to be perfect, then, you know, you might not convert. So I'm thinking, it sounds like part of the program was in Spanish, part of it was in English. And I'm wondering if that's causing some confusion. And also, I didn't quite get what you're saying about the PayPal. But I think, you know, something's wrong with conversion. So if you're having something a little unusual with PayPal, then I would definitely take a look at that. So I'd look at your offer. I'd look at making it congruent with both the Spanish and the English. And then I would look at, you know, cleaning up the PayPal so it's really easy to use. Because, yeah, that conversion sounds like you did a great job with the launch, got people excited, but the final sale just wasn't there. So, yeah, to me that's probably an offer issue, and it could also be a payment issue. Okay, I got one more that came in. We'll take that one. This will be our last question here from Veronica.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
I have a question about joint ventures, and do you think that a person should do one JV launch at a time, or should you launch a bunch of JVs at a time?
Well, boy, that's it's a pretty broad question. You know, I do, and as I mentioned in the course, I'm definitely in favor of doing internal launch first and getting everything
right.
Nailed down.
Which I've done.
Excellent. So then the question is, you know, if I did one and it worked and I had good metrics, then I try to get, you know, a handful on board. You know, you might do one first, do one like a launch with one joint venture partner just to make sure you got the tracking set up and you got everything figured out. But then I'd blow it out. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily go for hundreds, but I'd go for a handful, you know, 5, 10, 15 partners and see if you can make some noise. Because, you know, once you have your, you know, since you've already done your internal launch, you did a lot of the work already, you know, and if you can get multiple people on board, I mean, the one-at-a-time deal is nice, but, you know, it takes forever. You know, you're going to end up doing one or two a month.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. So, I mean, you might want to try doing, like I said, do one with one partner just to make sure all the tracking works and you know, you've got the squeeze page is going to change a little bit and stuff like that. So some things are going to change. So maybe, you know, pick out one, do it, and then if that works, then just blow it out. Don't go huge. Certainly, things start to change once you get above, you know, 15, 20 partners. It starts to get a little tougher to manage. Not tougher.
Right.
It's just a little bit more to manage.
Well, and what I've done, Jeff, is I've built single page opt-ins, single individualized squeeze pages for each JV that's above 25,000.
That's awesome.
So they'll actually have their own squeeze.
That's awesome. Yeah, that takes care of a lot of, you know, that really helps the tracking is what it does, and it's more valuable. They can see, you know, people love having a hard code page like that to go to, you know, or to promote to. So yeah, that's perfect.
Okay. The other thing about that I just wanted to mention, I don't know if I realize this kind of by trial and error, is that because I'm in AWeber, and what I found is that if you do the single squeeze page, then you can tell the difference, and you build out a list for that squeeze page.
Right.
Then you can tell the difference between who's opted in versus who's converted, so you can actually give them real conversion rates. I don't think you can do it if you're sending everybody to the same squeeze page, even if you're tracking.
Yeah, well, you can. It depends. What you need, like what I do is when someone opts in, there's a hidden field, and I'm inserting the affiliate code so that later in the future when I mail those people, they're getting mailed back to their affiliate link. And so then you can pull reports based just on the affiliate code. But that's a little more advanced. I mean, you need some advanced programming to be able to feed that affiliate code in.
Okay.
So, yeah, what you're doing is you're just using that. You're creating a separate opt-in, so that separate opt-in has a separate tracking code, and then you can just run your reports on that tracking code. Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, Veronica. Thanks for the question. Okay, that about wraps up call three here. So let's see. Next up, we're going to be, I think I'm going to be releasing module four. Let's see, this Friday, on Friday the 12th. So you still have the better part of a week to get through Module 3. I know Module 3 was big and meaty. Apologize about that, but it really had to be to cover all the ground. And then I think you're going to really enjoy Module 4. As we crank along, the next call we've got isn't for two more. Well, no, wait, I take that back. It's on the 18th, which is 10 days from now. It's going to be Thursday the 18th. So that's it. I enjoyed the call. Thanks for tuning in. And look for an email from me about new modules, more calls, and extra goodies that are coming your way. Thanks a lot, folks. Bye-bye.